All right, welcome back to Coast AM. Check this out. It's crazy. A rare blue moon this weekend could be an omen to something really bad is about to happen. We've all described that event, right? It's happened. It happens. It's going to happen once in a blue moon. But now a blue moon is actually about to kick off tonight, right now, during Coast to Coast. Run outside and check it out. A blue moon is a second full moon in a calendar month. Last time it happened was last July. You can read the full story right now in the news on coasttocoastam.com. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Coming up next, Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, is the world's leading expert on alien abductions. His 38-plus years of field research has focused on physical evidence and led to his groundbreaking discoveries of alien implants and alien fluorescence. As a former military police officer and CIA operative, he has a unique insight into the alien organization, which he believes functions similarly to an intelligence agency. He's a very close friend. We work closely together. He's a frequent guest on not only Coast to Coast, but Fade to Black. And I'd like to welcome back to Coast, Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. And Daryl, welcome back. But normally I would say, how have you been? What have you been up to since I saw you last? But we just spent the weekend together. You came over to the house and had dinner with Rita and myself, and you brought Jolene with you. And it was an opportunity for me to sit with someone like you with your experience and background. We sat there for probably 6 or 8 hours one-on-one and just talked. And it was an eye-opening experience for me. And I want you to share a couple of things. 38 years. How has things in ufology and abductions started to change? And where is it at today? And what's different now than it was in 1972?
Okay, Jimmy, the difference between back in the 70s and 80s is radically different. There was, I went to one UFO group one time many years ago, and I'm telling you, they had a car that had a UFO, a plastic UFO model, a giant one, glued to the top of their car. And I met another person at the at a conference, Tim Bike conference years ago, back in the late 80s, that lady claimed to be Princess Charula, and she was from some planet, of course, and claimed to be 300 years old, and met a guy named Shield O. I guess that was her boyfriend, her counterpart. He was from some other planet. Anyway, they started getting older very rapidly, and everybody realized that that was kind of a scam, and they took off. There were honest people back then, but there were also some weird, strange people back then, too. Today, it's much, much better. You've got good organizations, good people, and serious researchers out there. So this is really quite a change now.
You went to India. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of background for the audience really quick. It was about a year ago, and you told me about this upcoming investigation, a research project, and surgery, a hopeful surgery at that time, that you were going to do in India. And I want to say this correctly, the enormity, the importance of this particular case was extreme. It had all of the elements in it. And you were able to actually get things going, go to India, perform the operation, remove the object, and get back here to the United States, which you have currently in your possession, this latest implant. Now, if you could share with everybody how this happened, how you were contacted, and how important this actually is.
I was contacted initially by two of our researchers in India. These are two young guys. One of them is named Hitosh, and the other was named Shabash. And they made initial contact with the lady and felt like the case was very, very good. And they contacted me, and I had numerous meetings with the lady over the phone, over emails, and finally, after she filled out our forms and went through the testing we did with her that we could, I was pretty impressed with what I heard, and it's enough that I was willing to spend about $5,000 and go to India and meet the lady there and set up the surgery. And that's exactly how it all started.
Where was the implant located?
The implant we located, there were several actually, but the one we were going to go after was one that was very pronounced, and it was in her shoulder. This was amazing to me because it was real, super obvious. And in fact, the lady brought up the question, she said, why in the world would they put it where you could see there's something obviously there? And I said, my opinion, that's the one that we're supposed to find. That's the other two that are deep and in other places that we probably are not supposed to look at.
Where are the other two?
The other two is one is in her knee in the patella area, and the other is in her side.
Right side or left side? And how it's deep?
It's on the left side. Excuse me, if you're facing, you'll be able to... it's on the left side. It's on her right side on the actual body. And it's pretty deep. And again, I think the reason for this sort of thing is because they don't want anybody looking at that one. But we intend to get all three of them. The next surgery, I hope to get the other two.
How confident are you that this is alien?
Well, I'm confident that her experiences are alien and that most people do not go through surgery from one to three times because A, they made it up, or B, because they just want to go to surgery. That just doesn't happen. The confidence level I have in the individual lies in the fact that she's a number one, a professional. Number two, that there are multiple contacts in the family. That's familial. It's in the family lineage. And when this individual has an experience such as the time when we had the surgery, other people in the family knew about it because the alien made sure they did.
The surgery was videotaped, right?
The surgery was videotaped. I met with the surgeon, told him exactly what I was going to need, and I said, I don't want to sound offensive here, but I've done this 24 times before, and it's my 25th case. I said, so I need you'd follow these instructions as close as possible. And the owner of the hospital was present, and he was interested in the money. And the surgeon was just fascinated. And after a while, in my opinion, he's kind of figured out, oh my gosh, this is going to be fascinating. So he kind of figured out this was alien related.
The doctor, the surgeon.
The doctor himself. Yes, the surgeon, he had the biggest smile on his face and said, if you ever come back here again, he said, please let me know, number one, know what you found. And two, he said, I would love to be able to help you with this.
Now, I've seen the x-rays. I've seen photographs of the object. I don't know how to put it into words for the radio audience, but I think of the movie Alien with Sigourney Weaver, to be quite honest with you. Can you describe what the object right now looks like?
The object is located in a very gray biological mass that surrounds the metal object. The purpose, in my opinion, it has been in the past, the gray biological area surrounding the cocoon, so to speak, surrounding the metal object is designed for the body not to be able to find it, to notice it. And if it is consistent with what we've had with other implanted objects that are alien, we will find that the gray area, so to speak, surrounding the object is a non-inflammatory response to the object itself. In other words, the body doesn't even know it's there. It didn't just wall it off. It doesn't even know it's there because if the gray matter is consistent with what we found before, the gray matter is in fact keratinous material that literally comes from the surface skin like a scoop mark, and that the implant is wrapped in that and then inserted in the body so the body won't even recognize it as a foreign object.
How big is it?
The object is about a quarter inch long, And the, of course, the biology is about 3/4 inch long because I had them to remove all the surrounding biology that could be connected in any way, nerves, and any other biology that could be connected, because we want the pathology to study the biological part of this independent, of course, of the metal.
Now, the abductee or contactee abductee that this object, this implant was removed from, does she remember how it was implanted in her, and is she conscious of that?
The lady is conscious of the implantation, and it's the whole thing is just is the whole thing. Her whole story is just so stunning to me. I would, like I said, it normally I don't just don't say, well, I think I'll just spend $5,000 and go to some other foreign country just right. to retrieve this. The story was just. There are parts of her story she couldn't have made up because there are no references to it in the literature. Some of the things that she describes, I knew from my own experience, and I knew from my over 1,700 cases worldwide. I knew that this was just off the charts, and it was extremely compelling to me.
How taboo of a subject is this in India?
The subject is so taboo that, to put it very mildly, she told me, my family members don't think I should investigate about my implant and abduction experience. That is a minimal statement. They were not pleased in any way, shape, or form.
And tell the audience about the monkey people.
Okay, the fascinating thing is that... the brother initially had made statements many years ago that the monkey people were talking to him, and of course everybody thought, well, but that's kind of weird. But no one said anything. The reason they didn't say anything, in my opinion, is because they had similar experiences. Well, the problem with the monkey people story with the brother is he finally ended up under psychiatric treatment for schizophrenia for the last 20 years and started behaving really weird and claimed that the monkey people were talking to him telepathically and now controls his actions. And I responded to and I later met the brother, very, very kind, very, very soft-spoken, very good, and very gentle young man. And I was stunned, and I had to wonder about this case. In other words, suppose you had such an experience, and these strange monkey people were talking to you telepathically, and you couldn't stop them from communicating with you. And of course, you'd think you're nuts after a while. And then... Then later they came along and the doctors saw this, then they medicated you, and then you keep hearing the voices, that they're still there, in other words. Let's take for just a second a very strange circumstance here, and this is very rare. Suppose these events are real, and now they medicated you, and now you can still hear them, and literally the medication only makes you docile, so to speak. In other words, you've been medicated for something that in fact is real. And now you're a psychiatric patient, and the events, in fact, are real. Because they're real with the other members of the family who are 100% sane and very sharp, very coherent, and many of them extremely educated people in the family.
So that wouldn't alter your memory, in other words?
Exactly. Not only didn't alter his memory, but the fact is that other members in the family are contacted by the quote-unquote monkey people. Now, for your audience, the monkey people are the imagery of a monkey. You should think, first of all, about the large black eyes and the size of the entity. In other words, small, about 3.5-4 foot tall maximum, with large black eyes as an example. And when you think of this, you're looking at you're imagining a screen memory. This is a false memory syndrome where the alien has actually taken an image and inserted it in your consciousness, and it often comes from it possibly your religion or possibly some other imagery you're familiar with. In this case, in India, the monkey image is a creature called Hunan, and it's a god there, and he's a very friendly, very kind, very affectionate being.
With this is why I find it fascinating, Daryl, is that the subject of UFOs and abduction and aliens today in the modern pop culture, modern culture in India, may be taboo, but yet the Vedic text and flying machines and Vimanas go back millennia and further, actually. And it you know, it's one of the root sources of a lot of modern alien technology and flying machines. And it's kind of a paradox, isn't it?
It really is. Jimmy, the fascinating thing about India, and I studied this before I went, and after, and long before, and then, of course, after I got there, Subhash and Hitesh took me to a number of different places, and we looked at all kinds of amazing things. To me, I could just see how the UFO imagery and the UFO history was embedded in the entire society, in the museums, in the architecture, in the various different things. It was just astounding to me. The history was just, it was all over the place. The amazing thing to me is how the people, quote unquote, don't see that. In other words, you don't go around India and talk about UFOs and flying saucers and this sort of thing to everybody there. But if you talk to them in terms of the gods that they have, their ancient gods, and that history and the flying machines they were in and so on, now it makes sense. You can talk normally about that.
Now, and immediately after, and help me on the timeline here, but immediately after the operation, weren't you contacted from the family and they said that the monkey people had come back?
This is the fascinating part of it. I've seen strange things happen in the surgery stuff before with the abductees, where they're either contacted or told not to do it, or they get this ominous feeling of you shouldn't be doing this, you're interfering with us, and so on and so on. So I'm thinking, you know, well, this will probably happen again, but I didn't say anything to anybody. Well, the wonderful news was that instead of having the surgery a day or two later, we had it the next morning, and somebody had misscheduled it. And so, I mean, literally, I got there that night, late that night, and the very next morning, we went to surgery. So the surgery happened before it was supposed to. So alien, in my opinion, if they were going to get angry with somebody or do something, they didn't realize that it happened too quick. So we went to surgery that morning, got it removed, and that night, something really amazing happened. I decided that I ought to type a great deal more information in my notes on my Air Mac computer laptop, and I opened it up. It thinks brand new, never had a problem with it. Opened it up, and it black screened on me. And I can hear it working, but I can't get screen up and talk. So I'm writing hand notes at this point, thinking that's really stupid. And I'm not much of a conspiracist, so I just let it go. And the next morning, the lady comes to me, and she is very, very upset, and says, last night, she mentioned the exact time my computer screen went blank. And I said, okay. She says, I got a phone call from my relative, and they said the monkey people were waking them up in strange dreams and so on, and they were beating on the lift, which means the elevator in the apartment building where they lived.
Let me jump in right there, Daryl. We're going to take a quick break. The monkey people in India. It's fascinating when we come back right after this. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest, Daryl Sims. Stay with us. Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. Yeah, man, that's what I'm talking about. KFPK FM News Talk 97.1 in St. Louis is presenting George Norrie Comes Home Live. Check it out. That's June 18th at 7 p.m. And then, of course, August 27th, Asheville, South Carolina. Go to Asheville, North Carolina, Living It Up in Asheville. Everything is over at the Coast to Coast AM event section for more info. But tonight, it's Daryl Sims, and we are talking about alien implants. Fascinating case out of India. Now we're going to shift things back to the United States. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and we're going to be taking your calls next. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'm watching right now Twitter, off to my left. You can follow me on Twitter, at J Church Radio. Interesting comments with everybody tonight. And any questions for myself or Mr. Sims, you can do that live to my left. All right, Daryl, we've been talking about India and the monkey people, but I want to shift things back over here to the United States and some of the current cases that you're working on. And certainly, there is this interesting case that you've been investigating with Terry Lovelace. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, Terry is a fascinating man. He's a 58-year-old retired lawyer, former assistant attorney general, a six-year Air Force veteran, undergraduate degree in psychology, doctorate in law, spent 7 years as an adjunct law professor, and he is an alien abductee. And on top of all of that, he may possibly have an alien implant. At least some of the doctors are talking privately behind his back about the strange things they found in his legs.
Now, it reminds me of some of the other politicians and public figures that have come forward, and it's very rare that when they do. But certainly Terry now, of course, pedigree and education and government service and so forth. For somebody that high level to come forward, have you ever experienced that before, and how important is that?
Well, that we have experienced something similar. He is, in my opinion, the highest level of attorney that's come forward by far. I mean, he is it. There is one other case in Wisconsin where a DA noticed a UFO outside his house and asked his wife to come get in the car with him and follow it around. They ended up abducted. In fact, I have his watch, which was melted from the inside. And both of them experienced alien abduction, and they actually fill out a report for it. Now, of course, that's not going to get you reelected, probably. But my point is that people like Terry have come forward and have literally laid it on the line because their events are real.
Let's. I've got a lot of calls that have lined up here, and a couple of them are about India. So I kind of want to back up a little bit and grab a couple of these calls before we let India get too far away from us. So let's go to Tony, right here in California, and he's got a question about the India surgery. Hi, Tony. Welcome to Coast.
Thank you. Glad to talk to you, Daryl. When the surgery was performed, before the surgery occurred, even though it was noticeable that there was an implant there, was there any broken skin or scar tissue above the implant, or was it just smooth skin?
Great question, Tony.
Great question. Tony, the skin was smooth, but the weird thing is that the Nordics that were on board the craft there told the lady that don't worry about it, you won't be able to see it, and everything will be fine. That wasn't the case at all. It was pronounced. You could see there was something underneath the skin, for sure.
But you had no sign that there had ever been surgery done prior to that?
No signs of surgery. In some cases, to be very clear to the audience, implants are extremely rare. I don't care what you read on the internet. I discovered this in 1960. I kind of know what I'm talking about after 25 surgeries. So implants are pretty rare, and these objects sometimes will have a scar where it's inserted, and other times they will not have a scar whatsoever.
Thank you for the call, Tony. Thank you so much. Daryl, you just mentioned Nordic with the India case. How did she describe not only the different ETs that were involved, but the interior of the ship?
I'm telling you, this case is something you could make a movie off of. It's better than Close Encounters, I'll tell you. And the reason it's better is because the whole story is true, to the best I can determine. And the fascinating thing is that she starts describing the Nordics that came through. She said, at first, I thought they were military from the U.S. Army. Now, that's fascinating because some people will describe, quote unquote, it's like the military got me. The military did it. And yet, after she gets past that, again, screen memory, then she sees the beautiful blue eyes of this Nordic female and other Nordics that were present. And they told her, you have to go meet the aristocrat. And she said that was the exact word that I was told. And then they took her to a reptilian alien who had of the highest authority. And anyway, this guy was, he was like the boss, period, on this massive craft.
How did she describe him?
She describes him as what I refer to in my presentations, and I'll refer to it again at Roswell this year on July the 4th, as a transgenic being is what she's describing. He was half human and half reptile, because in my view, these aliens, quote unquote, are transgenic beings made, hatched, cloned, manufactured, and constructed for the purpose of interaction with mankind.
Now, the object that was removed, how confident are you that it is the original object? In other words, the chain of custody, you were there present when it was removed in surgery. Have you, did you watch it get placed and given to you, spirited out of the country here, and it is the same object that was removed?
The object is, it's got an excellent chain of custody. We filmed, I not only filmed the surgery or had it filmed, but I actually made sure that the filming was done while the, after the object was removed. And then the nurse placed the object in the special container and in formalin, and then handed it directly to me. And it's been in my possession ever since. So we have an excellent chain of custody.
And you said earlier, this is important, that what was inside is metallic. How did you determine that?
Well, we can determine that the object appears to be a metallic based on the fact that it is that it's extremely radio opaque in the surgery. And this is by description of the doctor involved as well. This is in fact a metallic object, and it's very radio opaque. And we have not removed the biological containment yet, and I will do that with a specialist that I work with. It's on my team here in Houston. I have removed every biological containment on the implants that we have, and I'll do that one as well on film so that everybody will see that not only the chain of custody is good, but even the surgical removal is accurate. And then we will separate the biology, send the biology off to pathology to see what's there, independent of the metal, and then we'll have the metal as checked and established as well.
Now, this is your 25th, so you have experience with 24 others. Is there a similarity? Is there anything that you can look at and cross-check to determine that, you know, each is an implant and how the others are similar?
Very, very good question, Jimmy. The reason that we are confident that this that the procedure is the same as the other people that we've worked with, where we found the object was in fact extraterrestrial in origin. Number one, number two, the biological containment around the object was in fact a non-inflammatory response. Again, if that is true, that's consistent, and it's the dense, dark, very gray color, just like the material on this one. We're looking at the same thing. The question is, what is it exactly? We'll know soon enough when we get the evaluation done.
Now, Terry's, and this is what's interesting here, Terry's objects or his implants or suspected implants, I should say, are located in his leg. How common is that? And have you guys x-rayed Terry's leg?
We do have excellent x-rays of Terry. And Terry's got a series of objects in his leg. He's had a previous surgery before, so we're obviously looking at that. But what we're more interested in is the fascinating objects. There's a couple other things that don't kind of make sense. There's a large floral collection of objects there, which could be simply calcifications. That's entirely possible. What interests me is not what I think, but what his doctors are saying. I mean, the doctors are looking at his x-rays, and they're talking in little quiet tones over there by themselves. They won't let him hear. And he says, hey, I'm an attorney. You don't talk behind my back about my medical business. And they came over and said, we've never seen anything like it.
What do you do to confirm that somebody has an implant? Because is it possible that you could have an implant and not even know it?
It is absolutely possible you could have an implant and not know it. Simply, if the object is deep inside you and you've had a procedure but you don't remember it or don't recall it, you could certainly not know that it's there. Again, these are very rare. I want to stress that to your audience, because every time somebody talks to me and they've had a real abduction experience, they every one of them think they've had it, that they are in fact been implanted, and that generally is just not the case.
When you were sitting next to me the other night over at our house, I could have probably pointed out 3 or 4 or 5, maybe in a dozen spots on my body that are irregular, right? And and to get that paranoia about your own body and start thinking, hey, this could be something strange, is something that anybody can do with themselves. And how common is that? And where do you want people to just stop the panic and stop the paranoia? Is there a way that they can check at home?
There are several things that they can do, Jimmy. And first of all, the paranoia is a correct word, and it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the person. It just means if they've had a unique experience, such as alien abduction or contact, even not even abduction, but just contact, that makes people worried about, you know, what was done, what was left in me, you know, and maybe nothing was left in you. It's very probable it wasn't. However, if you were physically touched by an entity, literally physically touched, something unique happens. In many, many, many cases, it will leave a fluorescent trace. In other words, think of it as alien sweat or a alien fingerprint. Whatever it is on their skin, it will, if they touch you, say, with 3 long fingers, you're going to see 3 long fingers under a black light on your wrist or wherever they held you down. And this will be a very brilliant fluorescence, and it'll have a particular nanometer length that we're looking for. This is kind of a telltale sign to the individual that, in fact, there was a contact. And once they see something like that, they generally freak out.
And what should they do if they do find something like that? What do they do?
Well, you call the alien hunter, of course.
Right.
If you contact me, if you've had alien experience, and at my email, and you just go to alienhunter.org and just simply type, just touch the alien hunter image lettering there, and it will send me an automatic email. But the thing is, I will send you some forms that tell you how to look for the fluorescence, what we're looking for, what we're not looking for. That if the fluorescent comes off, that if it does any certain things, we don't want to hear about it because it's not what we're looking for. And we'll tell you what we are looking for. But generally speaking, there's a whole procedure there for you to even take a sample of the fluorescence.
Now, I can only imagine, Daryl, that walking around in your bare feet as a kid, everybody's got stuff in their feet. We've all accumulated that. But when it starts to be in a different location in the body, that's more interesting to me. Where's the most common location for an implant? The implant in India was in the shoulder, but you hear about stuff behind the ears and the neck and different locations on the body. For you, where should somebody look first? Or if they have something at a specific spot in their body that maybe they should think about it?
When I first talked to several doctors about this early in the early 90s, that's the first question they ask, where would these things normally be found? And I said, actually, in different locations of the body, but the most prominent is the nasal passage. This was certainly my case in 1960. I remember the event consciously. I've never had hypnosis or anything else to recover this information. And by the same token, the lady in India that has the same ability, she has remembered a vast amount of this. Consciously.
What do the objects look like that would be in a nasal passage? I had a guest on Coast to Coast last month. We talked about this, and he had something about the size of a BB fall out of his nose. Have you ever come across anything like that?
I have for sure. The fact is that we've had a little girl that told her mother, and she's whining and crying, "Mommy, Mommy, some strange little man with large black eyes came into my room, and he did something in my nose." And she, of course, the lady called me, "What do we do?" And I said, "Same thing I told you in the workshop. Have her sneeze into a Kleenex." And she did repeatedly, and she said, "Oh, my God, I found four little tiny gold spheres." And she said, "They're about the size of a pinhead." And the mother lost those four. They were so small, they fell. She got playing with them, and they fell off of the carpet. And she lost them. She said, "But that's okay, Mr. Sims." Says, because about three or four weeks later, she calls me again, and the little guys came back and did the same thing with the little girl and repeated the incident, and we got those. And I've had them looked at the University of York University in Toronto, and the care of Dr. Nick Balakis is through a metallurgist there.
Now, the implant that you just removed out of India, now it's here. It's somewhere, you know, in the United States. How do you know that the ETs don't know exactly where that implant is? Or maybe they do.
Well, maybe they do. And the interesting thing, and I've only had this happen one time with me, because like I say, I'm not a conspiracist, and I'm not into this stuff. I actually was in Washington State years ago, and staying at a friend's home while I was speaking at a conference during the day, and I had the most awful dread experience that something was near, and I'd had this feeling before. Now, my abduction experiences occurred when I was four, and they ended, finally ended when I was 17 in a violent experience. My point is that there have been no contact experiences since then. Now,
well, let me jump in right there, Daryl. We'll pick that up right after the break. Plus, we're going to be taking your phone calls for Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, for the rest of the night. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Your questions and phone calls are next. This is Coast to Coast AM.